You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast here on BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kelvin, and with me today, it's Mark. Hey, Mark.
Good morning, Calvin. How are things on the other side of the pond?
They are, well, good afternoon for over from Manchester. So, yeah, we are good. I'm going to get it straight out, though. I'm a little ropey today. I was celebrating my next-door neighbour's wedding last night. So congratulations to Matt and Liam, who got married, now Mr. and Mr. Good.
Congratulations.
Liam actually listens to the show. He's not a Star Trek fan in the slightest, but
he's a Calvin Wood fan.
Yeah. Yes. Don't tell his husband. So I might have had a couple of drinks last night, so I'm a little worse for wear today.
Well, do you think this is gonna like maybe slowly dip him into the water of Star Trek, and maybe
so,
I don't know.
Do you know what? He's a barrister by profession. So I really want him to watch last week's Strange New Worlds, the Una episode. I wanted him to see Yatidi's performance as the kind of the barrister in the episode.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's kind of, you know, prosecution and defense in court. Oh. What would you call them over there?
Well, lawyer?
Yeah, no. I mean, lawyer is a general term, but a barrister is the guy who stands up there and kind of speaks in front of the judge. So, yeah, a lawyer can be a solicitor or a barrister. Don't want to get into legal quibbery. But, yeah, that's his job. He loves an argument.
Oh, I would love his opinion on this. You'll have to let him know what he thinks of that that episode.
Yeah, he's just about to go on a 5-week honeymoon, so it won't be for quite a while.
Oh.
How's your week been over in Boston?
I'm sitting over here and I'm crispy, a little crispy today. I went and spent yesterday on the beach, and you know, it was deceptively like a little hazy. So we have the wildfires from Canada that are, you know, the smoke is coming out. And so it was very sunny yesterday, but also there was this haze over, you know, the sun for most of the day. So I was like, oh, it's, you know, it's fine. I put sunscreen on, but I didn't exactly like put a lot on. I just kind of put a light sunscreen, and I got home the end of the day, and now I look like a strawberry.
You do not. It looks lovely on you. You've got a lovely color.
Oh, well, we'll see how lovely I am in a few days when it's all peeling.
You're going to look like Neelix in that Voyager episode.
Oh, gross. No. It's true, though.
I love it. Well, before we get on to this week's topic, shall we see what's been going on over at Strange New Worlds?
This is the bridge. All hands to emergency escape pods.
Escape pod! As our listeners know, this is the segment where we will discuss the latest episode of Trek briefly before we get into the main topic. So this week we're talking about Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which is kind of appropriate because, you know, this week's episode's also a time travel episode. So there you go.
Serendipity. I love it. Well, speaking of I love it, I'm sure the listeners by now must be sick of just hearing me come on saying, oh my God, I love Strange New Worlds. What fantastic performances the actors give. But it's true again. They've just knocked it out of the park again. I've watched this episode 4 times this week. I loved it that much.
I thought you were going to left turn. I thought you were going to be like, okay, and this is the one. No. This is the one stinker.
No. I love it. What did you think of it?
Here's the thing. So I think it's a mixed bag for me. Now, I am a big Strange New Worlds cheerleader. Everybody that listens knows that. I love this show. And, you know, I've already watched this episode a couple of times. I will say, I don't think I'm the only one that had mixed emotions on this one because I got some texts and phone calls from multiple people around the network about this. Oh, I got to process this with you. Oh, okay. And we talked about it. And I think the main thing, and, you know, so Matt Jennings, who's on Cinema Z with me, he, him and I had discussed this episode a little bit as well. And something he had said, and this is what I want to bring to the podcast this week, is that he had said that they had spent, I guess, a lot of the episode on maybe the setting up the romance,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's sort of forcing the romance and making the romance be a thing.
And why is that a bad thing?
It kind of, it came as like a sacrifice to the other part of the plot, like the Khan storyline, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the Khan storyline really should have been the main plot. And maybe have there be little nods to like a romance, but the romance seemed very shoehorned and stretched out and affected the pacing a little bit. And I agree in that regard, right? Now, Christina Chong's acting, I mean, that was just, she should get an Emmy. It was like so good. I think Paul Wesley, who I still do not like as Kirk, was slightly more Kirk-like in this episode. So that was good. That was mm-hmm. good. But yeah, I don't know. I think I need to watch it two, three more times before I like love it. But I will say I love, again, that it's episodic. I can pop it in and out. I will pop it in and out. It's fun. I think the bit with Pelia, I think she had some good lines in there as well. Yeah, I don't know. What's your take, Calvin?
So, the case for the defense, I adored it. And I don't think there needed to be a Khan storyline. This was a Laan episode, through and through. And you've heard me talk so much on this show about that kind of the vulnerability in people's personalities is the bits you fall in love with. And I thought they are making Laan into this beautiful hybrid of like the self-loathing qualities that Belana Torres has got with the kind of standoffishness of Odo. And they're just pouring this. I think Laan is now my favorite character following this episode. First of all, I love Christy Chong. What she can communicate with a side eye look is just, you don't need the dialogue. She's just so deadpan in the way she just gives people a side eye to shoot them down. It's great. So there's that. But the whole Khan aspect was her coming to terms and making peace with the relationship with her family and Khan and the Augment.
You don't think that was the most important?
No. I think, and the romance that you've kind of suggested is shoehorned, I think that is beautiful. It's got all of the kind of the, when Odo was in love with Kira and it was completely unrequited, that was some of my favorite aspects of DS9, which was ruined when they put them together, by the way. But that whole kind of her letting her guard down and letting someone in for them to be killed and then for no one to remember it and her being told not to speak about it and her breaking down and crying at the end of the episode made me cry. I loved it.
If you don't get emotional watching that part, then you don't have a heart.
Yeah. Your lump of coal in your chest.
Yeah, she ugly cried.
Yeah, it was really good. And I'm not usually a fan of time travel episodes that come back to the modern day. I think it can be a bit lazy. And I know season two of Picard got a lot of stick for doing that. But obviously there was the pandemic kind of required it. But even things like Future's End in Voyager, when they came back to 1996, I was like, oh, God, really? But I liked it. And I like that they showcased Canada as well as a character. I thought that was great. I think originally they wanted it to be pretend to New be York. New York.
Yeah.
But then they thought, actually, why don't we just let Canada be Canada? For the... It'll be a lot easier to explain.
It's like when in Picard, when was it Velasquez Rocks?
Yes.
It was the first time it was actually Velasquez Rocks.
Yeah, yeah. It's so good. I like this whole episode of a character, because when people like you and me who enjoy the kind of the all good things aspect of Star Trek, of just randomly pick an episode out of sequence, what am I in the mood for today? And sometimes you're in the mood for a genre. It might be, I want a time travel episode, I want a space battle episode, but I choose my episodes based on a character. And I will say, today I want to watch a Jadzia Dax episode, or today I want to watch an Odo episode. So when I'm in a L'Arn mood, this will be my go-to now. And I love that. I love that we're getting the character episodes and celebrating the ensemble. So for me, it was a 10 out of 10. I loved everything. And what we said about Paul Wesley, I think you're right. I'm not quite there with him yet as Kirk, but I almost kind of imagined him as a different character. And I think his portrayal of a Starfleet officer who she fell in love with, I think that was a good story. But I still have a little bit of a way to go to accept him as Kirk.
There was something that came across in the Ready Room this week where he had mentioned that, you know, there was the two Kirks. There was the Kirk that was in the 60s show, and then the Kirk that lives rent-free, essentially, in people's heads.
Yes.
And the idea of Jim Kirk. And if you go back, and he had a point there, if you go back and you do watch, especially the first couple of seasons of TOS, Kirk is very kind of serious and stern a lot of the time. It was very much less playful than I think people remember him being, like, from especially like the movies and maybe like, you know, season three. And then, of course, the Calvin films, where he's very much swashbuckling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I see his point there. But I'd encourage him, if he gets invited back, to dial up the Kirkisms a little bit, because still, it's just very hard to find.
Yeah, it is. And I like that he explained that to Will Wheaton in the interview on the Ready Room. But it kind of depends how much we're going to get of Paul Wesley, because if you're doing it so incremental, then we're going to need a lot of you to actually see that get to where it needs to be. So I like he's got a method, and he's going to get there, and we're going to start to see more of the Kirk we know. But I don't know, maybe we're a little harsh as fans that, you know, when you have to take on that legacy,
yeah,
we kind of expect you to be there from day one. And it's interesting because Uhura hasn't had this kind of criticism. Like,
oh, and Spock, you're not either.
Spock, Chapel obviously is completely different than Majel was. So
there was enough of the essence.
Yeah, yeah.
And as far as Nurse Chapel, like, Nurse Chapel was a blank slate. She might have appeared throughout, you know, TOS, but her character was never really fleshed out. We didn't really get to know her anyway. So, you know, I'm a little more okay with where they're going with her. And I like it.
Oh, I love it.
I like it a lot.
I love it. Yeah. Good old Jess Bush. Right. Well, shall we leave 2022 Toronto and maybe head over to 1947 Roswell? What do you think?
Oh, I love it. Let's go.
Fabulous. So this week, we are continuing our time travel episode series with part six. And we're going to look at a DS9 episode, Little Green Men, from season four, the Ferengi Romp. So, Mark, do you want to give us a brief overview of what happens in this episode for the listeners?
I would love to. So I'm going to see if I can stumble through this synopsis, shall we? I'll do my best. So you have Nog, who is going to be accepted into Starfleet Academy, or has been accepted into Starfleet Academy, and he's the first Ferengi ever to do so. So that's a big deal. Also, he's reached the age where they have a young Ferengi male sells his possessions to essentially move on to the next stage of his life. So he's leaving his childhood things behind and he's selling them. And so there's that big auction at the beginning of the episode in Quark's bar that was a lot of fun. And Worf took a shining to that tooth sharpener. That was cute. I think this season they were still trying to figure out what to do with Worf. But these cute one-off moments I really enjoy. Cousin Gala comes up because, you know, it's a Ferengi episode and Quark's going to mention his cousin Gala, who owns a moon, by the way. They didn't bring it up this time, but he does own a moon. And he has gifted Quark a shuttlecraft of his own, or a ship, a little bit slightly more than a shuttlecraft. It's a small ship. And he asks Rom to go look at it because, of course, Rom is very good at, mechanical things and helps maintain the bar. So Rom goes and looks and checks it out and says, oh, it's A-okay. Looks, everything is fine. And Quark's a little bit side-eye, like, are you serious? Because, you know, it's from Cousin Gala. It's probably messed up in some way. And he's like, no, not that I could tell. So they full speed ahead to Earth to bring Nog. And what happens? There's an issue with engines, but the engines just won't stop. And so that is the problem that they wouldn't have figured out until they were at warp. And now what are they going to do? So they decide to essentially ignite the contraband they have in the cargo hold. And when they do that, they are able to essentially pull themselves out of warp. But what happens is they also push themselves through time, through a portal, and end up back in the 1940s. And they are in New Mexico, and they end up being the aliens that crash in Roswell. Get taken to Area 51 at Groom Lake, Nevada, which is very near Amy Nelson's house. And I love that. So we end up finding out, I think in this episode, that the Universal Translators for the Ferengi is located in their head. We have that great moment where they're hitting their heads to try to get it working. And I love when they're looking at all the Ferengi, like the humans are thinking, oh, that one must be the mother, and they point at Quark. That's so funny. We also find out that Odo has stowed on board and helps the boys escape, and they end up flying the ship through a nuclear blast in order to collect the radiation and enough to get spun up back into the present time. So all of that happens, and yeah, it's a fun one-off episode. I love this episode.
Thank you. A very, as always, a very comprehensive synopsis, a scene-by-scene breakdown, if you will. Now, I know you've previously said to me, how can you call yourself a Deep Space Nine fan when you're constantly saying, I don't like Worf, I don't like the Klingon episodes, I don't like the Ferengi episodes. I do love this Ferengi episode, so I will get that out there. I think it's great character development with having Quark, Rom, and Nog all together, and obviously throwing Odo in the mix as well as one of my favourite characters. It's great. That and the whole fish out of water aspect to it, I really like. Obviously, this is a really bit of a, you know, play on Roswell, the incident, and leads us to believe that, as Trek fans, well, Roswell was a real incident, and it was actually the Ferengi who are now the Roswell aliens. So they have kind of retconned, I don't know if you can say reality, because we don't actually know that the Roswell incident took place. It's a conspiracy theory.
Something did happen.
Something happened. A weather balloon happened, Mark. You should know that. That's what we're all told to believe. But what do you think of kind of Trek becoming real-life historic events? Do you like it when they do that, or do you think it's a bit weird?
I think it's been fun every time they've done it. They did it in Voyager with the 47s. 47. Yeah. Well, yeah. And they had Amelia Earhart. So that was cool. I love it. I think it's kind of cute. Now, when you think of those moments, you could also think of Trek as well. The only time I think it didn't work is when they went to that planet, again, a Voyager, and it was dinosaurs. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Distant origin. Yeah. I like
that's their code of honor.
Oh god, that's code of honor was on TV yesterday. Just
why was it on TV?
Yeah, and I just put the sci-fi channel on. Code of Honor was on. I was like, no, maybe I'll go and make dinner now. I walked away from the episode. I like how Voyager in Future's End kind of laced reality by saying it was the time ship that caused all of the technology that we enjoyed in the 90s and the noughties. I thought that was very clever, peppering Star Trek in. But also as well, just tying back a moment to what we've just said in Strange New Worlds, I think they've gotten themselves into a little bit of a mess with the whole eugenics war now, because it was supposed to be 92 to 96, which obviously is in the past for us. But now they're trying to retcon that almost, what the kind of the Romulan agent said in this week's episode of there's these time ripples and now the eugenics war is going to be a little bit further into our future. So I don't know, are they trying to merge the concepts of the eugenics wars and World War III? Because if they push it back any further, we're going to have two kind of terrible tragedies happen at the same time and bring about the Federation.
Well, something that I think one of the producers had said is that they want to keep in the spirit of Trek with it to be the future being optimistic and with, you know, keeping it contemporary. So we all lived through the 90s. We know that that obviously didn't happen. So to push these events uphill a little bit to the future, you know, another decade or two from actually happening, it means that, you know, it's still, these events in Star Trek are still in the future. And so I'm not mad about it. And also, you know, there's a lot of timey-wimey stuff with Enterprise, and we get into the eugenics wars, not eugenics wars, sorry, that the time, what is it called, the temporal cold wars. We get into that a little bit with Enterprise. And I love that those threads, so you get the Voyager threads, the Enterprise threads of the temporal cold wars, are sort of laced into this. Well, that's back to Strange New Worlds, the Strange New Worlds episode from this past week. And also, you know, a little bit this episode, because it has our crew essentially, like, you know, creating the history that we all live in now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm happy when they do that. I'm fine with it.
I like it. And I really accept this Roswell incident as, you know, it was the Ferengi. I think it's hilarious and brilliant in equal measures. But that kind of retconning is historical events. I've just got visions now of you and I sat here as really old men in the future in 2063 saying, oh no, they're going to have to change when first contact was made because it should have been last week.
Oh man, if I make it that far.
I know. Do we think we'll still be podcasting in 2063?
I don't, they might have another medium. All I know is that it'll be a long road getting from there to here.
Hey, like what you've done there. Okay, back to this episode. One of the things I really like about Star Trek, and I think it's generally acknowledged that everybody loves it, is that kind of holding up a mirror to society. And Deep Space Nine does it a lot, particularly with Quark episodes, for Quark to be very scathing of humans, specifically when looking at what we are here and now in our present day, but obviously what humans were in the past when it comes to Trek. And we've got some really, really great kind of contemporary references of, you know, the use of atom bombs and smoke, how everyone was smoking in the episode.
That was great. Do you think they would do that now? If they were to create that episode now, would they have everybody smoking? I think they could get away with it in the 90s. I don't know about now.
Yeah, so I remember reading about a lot of this, and obviously James does creative writing, my partner, so he in and does a lot of script writing as well at the university, teaching classes on things like that. And there are certain loopholes when it comes to theatrical productions or stage production that if it is part of the story, you're allowed to have actors smoking on screen or on stage, but you can't just have people doing it in the background to reflect a certain amount of people who do smoke in reality, because it's almost portraying a negative image and glamorizing smoking almost. Whereas this episode definitely fits the former. It is a reference that everyone was smoking at that time. And here's your aliens saying, why are they doing that? If they'll buy poison, they'll buy anything. Mm. I just think that is brilliant characterization for Quark, first of all. But it just makes you feel really stupid as a human that, yeah, someone has just kind of said, what's that you're doing there? Oh, it's really toxic and really addictive. It's like, how do they get it? They buy it. And he goes, they buy it? Brilliant. We've had this before with Quark kind of looking at humanity and commenting on how barbaric we used to be. If you remember in the season two closing episode, the Jem'Hadar, when he's having that argument with Sisko, and he says, you know, humans don't like Ferengi because Ferengi remind humans of what you used to be like when you call us greedy and manipulative, but we don't have anything in our history, in Ferengi history, which comes close to how savage humans were, such as world wars, and I think concentration camps are even mentioned there as well. So again, it's very hard hitting when, you know, you've got a character who's as shady as Quark, who's the one who's kind of laying down the morality message of the week.
I love Quark. you do have a point there. But I think that it's one of those things where you have to look at, especially like the Deep Space Nine characters are multifaceted, right? So they're not one way. You can't look at Quark and be like, well, he's completely, you know, irredeemable and there's no redeeming qualities to him, you know. There's nothing you could learn from him. And I think that's one of the messages of Star Trek, is that as different as a lot of these alien cultures are that we interact with and that we meet, we a lot of times will come at an episode with like this righteousness as a viewer of like, oh, what they're doing is absolutely wrong. And it's usually the captain or something will say towards the end of the episode, yeah, but from their perspective, we're the ones that are wrong in this scenario. And it's a nice little reminder of that.
Yeah, you're right. When we get that kind of twist moment in Star Trek, when, you know, you're going down this morality road and then actually it becomes something different, I think they're some of the best lessons that we can learn. And something that springs to mind straight away is the Cogenitor episode of Enterprise, you know, of Trip wanting to teach someone how to read and give them kind of, in inverted commas, human rights. And then at the end, that character commits suicide. And actually the damage that you've done is, you know, you've gone completely the other way. And that's like such a gut punch when you get things like that in Star Trek. It's storytelling at its best.
I think, you know, as, you know, somebody in management, I think that one of the best things that, you know, I can instill on the people that work under me as far as like conflict resolution is that concept of, you know, seeing things through somebody else's eyes and seeing that, you know, somebody else, you may 100% feel this way and you may feel justified in those feelings. However, you know, maybe the person you're interacting with might see things differently, and trying to come at it more with more openness and less closed offness in a place, coming from a place of understanding. And yeah, I love that is one of the great lessons of Star Trek is, you know, there are things here that we learn through watching Star Trek that we can take into our daily lives. And I think trying to see things from alternative perspectives and coming to a place of understanding with people that, you know, might feel very different from you and might come from very different backgrounds, trying to see things from those perspectives, that's a really important life lesson. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a comedy episode, let's face it, but this whole kind of commentary on the 1940s and humanity, it's a lot more serious, actually, when you go beyond the comedy aspects of the episode. And it just made me think, as humans here in 2023, are we really that different from the human characters in this episode in Roswell? You know, how far have we come? How far do we still have to go? I actually put it in the outline for today. I put it down as a regeneration, but kind of I really didn't like the it's not that I didn't like the character, but the Nurse Garland, the portrayal of the female character in the past. It was a very submissive character. You know, she didn't get to be the smart professor. She was just the girlfriend, and she says kind of whimsical things, and it's just not how we're used to seeing women depicted in Star Trek, and it was quite jarring. But that was probably a conscious decision, because that was how women were allowed to behave in the 40s. And that's almost quite a tragedy to have here someone who is really, really smart, but she's not one of the macho guys or the clever scientists. She's just the girlfriend.
One of the things that I really disagree with media in general, television, movies, anything like that, is revisionist history. When you try to go back and, I guess, fix problematic elements in history with your media, whether it's books or television shows or movies, because it comes at a detriment to the people that fought the good fight to bring us forward and get us to the place we are today, right? Mm-hmm. So if you go back and, you know, this is going to sound awful probably, and people can come at me, but if you go back and, like, today, like, you want to have a show set in the 1960s and it centers around a Black family and there's no racial tension and one of them's just like a banker and they, you know, go about their day and they're successful and have no problems with race, that doesn't exactly, like, help the cause.
No,
you have to show the struggle of how far they came to get here, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of I think that now where people don't like feeling icky, you know, and that's why you get like these, sorry, the red states here in America, where there is this drive to get rid of teaching about race, get rid of teaching about slavery, like in public schools. But when you do that, you're essentially like taking away the lessons for youth to learn.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
You know, and so when you see that, getting back to the topic of Star Trek, when you see that here, I think, as you pointed out, it's like it's the way things were, and it does make you feel bad. It makes you feel icky, and it probably should, because we shouldn't be treating women at all like second-class citizens.
Yeah. True. When you were speaking, though, I had Sisko in my head from, you know, how Sisko hated the Vic Fontaine Vegas program. And he really had to be convinced, because he couldn't acknowledge or accept that in the 1960s, Black people weren't accepted in Vegas casinos as customers, certainly. And you have that really kind of powerful speech from Cassidy Yates saying, no, it's not the way things were, but it is the way things should have been. And, you know, kind of just to allow yourself to accept this as fake, rather than kind of sticking your feet in saying I'm not willing to participate in this, as you say, revisionist history.
They had such smart writers for Deep Space Nine. Nobody can argue with that.
Fabulous. Shall we have a look at some assimilations and regenerations for the episode? So for the listeners, just to remind, assimilations are things about the episode we love. Regenerations are, as you just said, maybe the icky things that we didn't like and we want to throw back at them. So do you want to start us off, Mark? Have you got any assimilations?
Yes, I have an assimilation. And I'm doing this on purpose because I know it's your regeneration. When I think it's Rom is having the umaks happening. Or was it Nog? Nog was Nog. Having the umaks.
It was Nog.
I laughed so high because she had no idea what she was doing, the woman. And it's, you know, both the Ferengi guys knows what's happening there, but they can't really blame him. And actually, even Rom was like, oh, me next. My lobes are hurting too. It's like,
Mark,
I get such a big kick out of that. And I know
you put that in as an assimilation.
I know it's supposed to be code for, you know, one enjoying oneself, but I mean, it's their lobes. I don't know. I just always found that funny.
I find it creepy beyond belief. Why would Nog be basically asking what's Nurse Garland to jerk him off in front of his dad and his uncle? It's wrong. It's creepy. It's weird. Ooh. Ooh, Mox. Don't like it. Well, I'm going to choose something a little bit more wholesome. I love that little moment at the beginning of the episode where Nog's got the pad and he's researching human history, and he calls out the Gabriel Bell picture, yeah, from the Bell riots, and he says, "Doesn't this guy look just like Commander Sisko?" And it's just a great little Easter egg of the effects of past tense the season before.
I love that they are tying moments like this back into Trek. I thought that was a really cool shout out. It wasn't in this recent episode of Strange New Worlds, but it was a season one episode, the Elysian Kingdom, where you find out that the book itself was written by Benny Russell. So for, you know, decades since Deep Space Nine, people have been wondering whether or not that person actually existed. And we find out from that episode that he did exist and his legacy lives on. And so I love that. So it's not Gabriel Bell, but it's a tie back.
And it's so good that, because only diehard fans like us would even have clocked that. To the casual viewer, it's nothing. It's just a made up fictitious author, but we love it. I like in this example as well, again, the mirror to society, when Quark just casually comes back to Nog and says, you know, all humans look the same, which is so funny because obviously that is such a racial slur to make. But, you know, we could almost say that about Ferengi, you know, or other aliens within Star Trek, of they all look the same. How can they be distinguished?
And the monocultures.
Yeah, so yeah. It was just such a brilliant line of dialogue. I love it.
You gotta admit, I mean, this is another assimilation. Any of the when you get a reference to the rules of acquisition, it's great. You know, add to the rules of acquisition. I love that. And also the references to Cousin Gala, because, you know, I've seen all episodes of Deep Space Nine. I've probably seen them all, like, you know, a bunch of times. Not as much as TNG, but I've seen it a bunch of times. And so it's another one of those threads that when you come across it, you're like, oh, yeah, Cousin Gala. And then it made me think about the moon and whatnot and their animosity towards each other. And then I already knew all he had to mention was his name, who he got the ship from. And I knew as well, it was probably going to be messed up. And it was just a quick line of dialogue, but they had set it up throughout the series since, I think, what, first or second episode of Deep Space Nine is the first time they referenced Cousin Gala. So having another reference in there and having that be the payoff where the whole ship just kind of like won't stop. He's trying to kill him. It's like, oh yeah, of course. You shouldn't have trusted Cousin Gala.
When you brought up the rules of acquisition, then I had a flashback to childhood. I remember when I found out there was 285 rules, I just wrote 285, and every time they would name drop one, I would go and write it in manually in pen in the order. So I used to write the rules of acquisition as they were just randomly name dropped in an episode. And then I remember when the official book came out, I was like, oh, I should have wrote that book.
Yeah.
I liked in this episode the what you were saying earlier about the universal translator. It looked like Quark was grooming Nog in the way that apes do. So for the humans to not be understanding what the Ferengi were doing and kind of trying to interpret primate behavior from them, I thought was hilarious. I thought that was great. And unlike we know that they're just trying to fix the universal translator.
And they thought that the humans at that time were the primates. So they were looking at each other thinking they were both primates.
Brilliant.
What do you think about the universal, on a, just a side topic here, what do you think about the universal translator being something that's sort of implanted, I guess, inside of their ear canal? How do you feel about that?
I don't think I have really thought about it in any great detail. It's just something I accepted. So it's basically wearable tech, isn't it? That's, you know, we have also, you know, you might have a little diabetes glucose monitor on your arm. People accept things like that these days. Ferengi have a microchip in their head, which means they can decipher languages. And, you know, it's an extra skill at the bargaining table. It might make you have the upper hand in certain situations. Mm. So you can understand that technology being developed and used on Ferenginar. Whereas some people would think, I won't put an Apple Watch inside my head. That's a bit, it's going down the Borg route, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, so does that mean that Ferengi are a little Borg-like if they all have this, you know, tech implanted in them? They're all a little bit cybernetic?
I just think it's another great example of Star Trek suggesting something that isn't too futuristic. I mean, as I said, what year would this have been? In the mid-90s?
Yeah.
Whereas these days, we have loads of wearable tech. Yes, we don't input microchips in our heads yet, but we have, you know, Google Glass and, as I said, glucose monitors and all sorts of biometrics being measured for heart rate and things on wearable tech. So, yeah, Star Trek did it again. It got there first. Someone's obviously seen it. Maybe we will have universal translators very, very soon.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be a nice thing?
Oh, it would be amazing. Considering I'm far too lazy to learn foreign languages, I think it would be a great thing.
Oh, Duolingo hates me. I downloaded the app and I tried it for a few days. And then it just kept emailing me and I was like, no.
Yeah. Yeah, every time James and I go on holiday to Spain and we very like awkwardly try and order food and drinks and that, and we just every year look at each other and say, we're so disrespectful of the local culture. We need to learn the language. We come here every year and every year we struggle with the most basics of ordering food and drink. And we're the typical Brits abroad.
The Google translation app, you can take a picture now of the menu and it will show you what it is in your native language. So I think the last time Andy and I were maybe in Europe or something, I used that and could read it, and then when the waitress came over, I just pointed.
What trivia have we got for this episode?
Well, this is the first time we hear the Ferengi language. I thought so. Interesting. And it was written by Robert Wolfe.
That's right. There's very few occasions where we hear it again, and notably springing to mind is the Enterprise acquisition episode that we covered a number of weeks ago.
That's right.
So those are the two. Little Green Men and Acquisition really stand out for me. Another first, again, a bit more of a comedy one, is this is the first time we use the infamous waste extraction term in Star Trek, which is a Star Trek term basically for the toilet. And Ira Burr and the writing team just kind of latched onto this and thought it was hilarious and tried to get it in as many episodes they could moving forward from this point. And it was usually poor Rom who ended up with all the waste extraction jokes or jobs, shall we say. So yeah, Rom got the crap jobs, pun intended.
Well, Ira Bear describes the episode as a public service, as Roswell just seemed to be everywhere in contemporary culture at the time. Which is true. Like, I remember in the 90s, there was a whole resurgence of just documentaries on it. You had the people that were adventuring to sort of get over to Area 51 and getting arrested and all of this stuff. You had X-Files. I mean, they were doing it. There was so much of that. So, yeah.
I think X-Files has got a lot to be responsible for this. There was that kind of the supernatural and the paranormal and the conspiracy theories that came from X-Files. It just kind of captured the consciousness of people. Yeah, it was everywhere, wasn't it? Ira Behr was apparently incensed by the use of an A-bomb as the background for a kissing scene between Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis in the film True Lies. And he just really felt that kind of glamorizing the use of an A-bomb was just showing that society had, we'd really lost our way if we thought that was, you know, the crescendo of a romance.
Oh, wow. I haven't seen True Lies, but whenever, I mean, I saw it when it came out. I saw it, you know, in the 90s, but all I remember about it is the great helicopter scene where Jamie Lee Curtis is sort of hanging on to the helicopter and they're flying over that bridge that blows up. Yeah. That's what I remember. I didn't realize it was a kiss with an atom bomb in it. That's a little weird.
Yeah, well, I've never seen that film, but I know exactly the scene because I think it gets used in a lot of the advertisements and the trailers at the time and things. So I know exactly where he's coming from with that. And it's true. It's not really a glamorous thing, is it?
No. Well, director James L. Conway heard about the episode and asked specifically to direct it. Since he previously directed a movie in 1980 called Hangar 18, which was a modern-day retelling of the Roswell incident. So he felt it had come full circle for him. And, oh, what a cool bit of trivia. I love that. That's really neat.
It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, final thoughts. Little Green Men, what do you think, Mark? And I love that you've got your green top on today, as I just said, Little Green Men.
It's green.
It's all things. There you go. We've had a little cinema Z moment talking about True Lies. The episode It Is Green. Oh, it's all things for you this week, isn't it?
Oh, what a fun episode. I like Ferengi episodes, and most people don't. I don't know why. I think they are hilarious. And I love Quark. He's one of my favorite parts of Deep Space Nine. I love Quark episodes, and so for me this is a go-to. It's a great one-off, again, low stakes. Nobody's having to save, you know, the whole universe and all sentient life. It's just, you know, he's taking them to school, you know, on a ship, and they end up going back in time and have to get back. And that's, I don't know, Star Trek's at its best when it's more about telling the story and less about the stakes of saving all of the things that exist. Yeah. So I enjoy
saving
it.
The universe.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love that. And I can pop it in or out and yeah, just like, you know, watch it over dinner, and it's fun.
Yeah. Same. I disagree when you said that some of the Ferengi episodes are unpopular. I think I'm very much in the minority with DS9 fans about not loving Ferengi episodes. I know the Magnificent Ferengi episode where they go and rescue Moogie is one of the most popular episodes of DS9 amongst fans. Just
oh,
not
really?
For me. Yeah, I think I'm my Ferengi bashing is it's not as common as you huh. think, but. I love this episode. I just think it's great comedy. It's great storytelling. It's great acting. You get some great moments from Quark in this episode, and indeed Odo as well, and that and their relationship, and the mirror on society, looking at the stupid humans who are all smoking and exposing themselves to atom bombs. I think it's a fabulous, fabulous message.
Yeah.
Right. What have we got next week?
Oh, man. Next week, we're in for a great episode. Another one. Back by popular demand, we are going to be discussing Enterprise. Now, listeners, I have asked in the BQN Collective, and feel free, again, to reach out to us If you are a fan of Enterprise, please let us know your favorite episodes. We will get them in there. So next week, we're going to be covering alternate realities, and this is part two, and we're going to be covering the Enterprise episode Twilight. So, Calvin, would you mind telling us a little bit about Twilight?
Absolutely. I think I mentioned offline earlier, this is in my top three Enterprise. It's a real favorite and a real great rewatch episode. We are in the Delphic Expanse in season three in the Zindi arc. And in this episode, Captain Archer is infected with some alien microbes that prevent him from forming long-term memories. So in effect, he almost has a form of dementia. It's a little bit of a dementia episode, but with a very sci-fi twist that the episode takes place a few months ahead in the future, where Enterprise has failed to save humanity from the Zindi. So you get lots of cool space shots of, you know, Earth being destroyed and the Zindi weapon being deployed. And you have Archer living on Seti Alpha 5, a little Wrath of Khan throwback. And he's being looked after by T'Pol, who is his nursemaid. And they come up with this plan of how to change the timeline or restore the timeline, get rid of the alien microbes from Archer, and then we have our second chance at saving humanity from the Zindi. So it's a great sci-fi, space battle, time travel, alternate reality. It's all in there, and I advise you all to watch it before next week.
Oh, I'm so stoked. This is going to be fun.
Right, well, let's have a very important message from the network.
What shows are on BQN, you ask? Well, here's a rundown of some podcasts you might be interested in. All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast covering all of Trek, hosted by Amy, Mark, Christos, and Kelvin. Bargain Bin Gamer, a YouTube show hosted by Davey, a self-proclaimed gamer who specializes in reviewing and showcasing affordable video games. If you're lost in the Delta Quadrant, check out The Captain's Couch, a Star Trek Voyager podcast hosted by Jeremiah sitting on Janeway's Ready Room couch. Cinema Z, a film discussion and review podcast showcasing films you probably missed but should definitely check out, hosted by Mark, Matt, and Laz. Beam Aboard the Galaxy Class, a Star Trek Next Generation podcast covering all of TNG, hosted by Amy, Joe, Rhea, and Kevin. History with the Zilagis, a snippet of historical events from around the world, hosted by Chrissy and Jason. For the newest Trek coverage, check out Infinite Diversity, hosted by Chrissy and Thad. Test your Trek knowledge with Trekspert's Quiz, a Star Trek quiz show hosted and written by Davey. Union Federation, covering all things Star Trek and the Orville, which we all know is really a Star Trek show, hosted by Kyle, Kevin, Amy, and Haley. Spill the Tea with What's the Tea, Bev? A Trek current events and fan interview show hosted by Christos. And for our Patreon members, we have The Hive Mind, BQN's monthly roundtable discussion with hosts and listeners. It's Green, a cornucopia of topics hosted by Mark. And Amy's Math Moments, a quick look at math moments in Star Trek, hosted by Amy. We know you have a choice of podcasts to choose from, and we thank you for listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
We would love to hear what you thought of today's episode and hope you'll join us on our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue our discussion there. You can tweet your thoughts to @AllGoodPod, and please make sure you follow the network on Twitter and Instagram @BQNPodcasts. We've also partnered with our friends at Fandom Podcast Network, where you can find us by searching The Master Feed. So Mark, where can people find you when you're smuggling chemosite in a stolen shuttlecraft?
Well, when I'm not doing that, you can find me in the BQN Collective Facebook page. You can find me on Twitter @MarkWhite207. You can find me on my show Cinema Z, where I like to talk about films, interesting films. And if you become a patron of the network on Patreon, you can listen to my show, It's Green. It's an interview show. I have interesting people on. We talk about interesting things. And there's cocktails involved, so it's usually a lot of fun. And Calvin, where can people find you when you are not getting umaks from James?
Oh, I can't believe you went there. You can
yes,
find
you can.
Me.
You can believe it.
Right, let's keep this clean. You can find me on Twitter and or Instagram at Kelvin's Timeline or on the Facebook group, the EQN Collective. Mark, it's you and I again. We always lower it to the gutter when we're not being looked after by Crystal today. This episode will have to come with a warning now. this time, we would like to thank our associate producers, Mahendra Radhakrishnan and Tim Cooper. Special thanks to Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music, and to our very own Mark White for our beautiful artwork each and every week.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We'll add you to the Hive Mind Facebook group so you can enjoy It's Green, Amy's Math Moments, and other network perks. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings on the Hive Mind Roundtable discussion on the second Saturday of each month. Visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages.
Thank you for listening.
We hope you'll join us as we search out
all good things.